Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you today?
Hi Kenny, I'm okay. How are you? I'm not feeling particularly well this morning, but I'm here. I'm here to talk about the wrestling, and that's good. I thought the wrestling was fun. How are you?
The wrestling was fun, yeah. I'm good. The bed frame arrived today, so now I can sleep on a bed.
That's nice.
My hair is very long.
I saw the picture on your Instagram. It was so funny.
Because I was like,
I like it. I'm not gonna lie. I think it's fun.
Well, I was like, because basically, if I'm drying my hair, which unfortunately now is a thing I need to do in a certain direction, because like I need to dry it backwards so it will slick back. Like that's the idea behind it, and like. At one point, so when I'm drying it, it's always like, as I dry it back, it flips forward. As I dry it back, it flips forward. It's just a game that I have to play for 10 minutes. And I just kind of got fatigued from drying my hair, and it all just fell in my face.
I find hair drying to be a fatiguing process. That's why I don't do it.
I can imagine. I mean, the thing that's difficult for me is, like, because I don't have a lot of hair, I have to, I have short hair. Like, every bit of it has to be dry before I put, like, gel or anything on it, because if I put it on wet, it won't work. And then it's a whole thing. So, but yeah, I just thought it was a funny photo, so.
It was funny. I kind of like it. I think your hair looks, ridiculous when you have it all, like, forward like that. But how does it look when it's, like, slicked back? It looks okay, right?
Yeah, it looks pretty good. I'm in pretty good shape. Obviously, I went and got a contraband haircut. We know this.
We know this.
But that's fine. I'm fully okay with it. And now I've got I've got a proper barber's appointment on like the 23rd or something, 22nd, something like that.
Fancy.
So, yeah. So that'll be good. So, yeah. And just been kind of getting stuff all right in the house. Going over to my friend Louise is tonight to watch Drag Race. So that should be good. Having to avoid.
You need to tell me your thoughts. I'm not going to say anything, but okay. Well, you need to tell me your thoughts.
Okay, that's scary.
It's not. I'm putting on a tone for no reason. But okay, there good. Was nothing to read into that.
But yeah, no, so
last week I think was more like of a drama explosion. Shall we say?
Yeah, that's true. So something else has happened just on the home front. So like this thing is happening in the kitchen where there's not a lot of news this week, folks. Hence, I'm telling you kitchen chat. But like,
I'm here for the kitchen chat, honestly.
So if you turn the hot tap on, there is a smell for about 30 seconds of vomit.
Oh, that's not good.
And if you turn the cold tap on, there's a smell for about 30 seconds of like kind of slightly off egg mayonnaise / egg salad.
Yeah, that sounds concerning.
So they've got someone coming out Monday to like look at it, but it's like it's just very, it's very difficult to like not like dry heave during that like 30 seconds.
Well, and like, passes. I mean, is the water like safe for consumption in situation?
The water itself is fine. I think it's something in the pipes, like on the something in somewhere. I was reading up on it, sometimes it could be something like sulfur that's to do with it. I mean, all I've been doing is washing dishes. I'm not drinking the water. But, yeah.
I was going to say, like, are you using that water to, like, cook and stuff? Because that sounds it could be leaching things. That would just, I would be concerned.
No, just washing dishes. That's all.
That's fair.
But yeah, so there's that. And then did the FTR interview on Wednesday, and that's loads of people were talking about it, which is good. So that was fun. Cash Wheeler's connection kept kind of falling out, and it was giving me hives, but we got there in the end. And yeah, there's not really been a lot going on this week apart from the Wednesday night shows. Have you got any gossip, any news, any happenings?
Nothing I'm gonna say on air. No. not really. You know that was a leading question.
Not that I wasn't leading there.
Anyway.
I was leading, like, you know, have you got a funny story about, like, a guy tripping over a melon in the store or something?
No, not really. Like the store, it was weird because like I went to work again on Thursday, right? And it felt really slow compared to the previous Thursday, which was of course like a pre-holiday Thursday because it was like the 2nd of July or whatever. So it was just before July 4th. And so this past week, like it was still very steady and like there was still a lot of people and we still had deliveries and stuff, but I felt like it was like a walk in the park compared to last week. And when I looked at the totals at the end of the night, like I'm not going to disclose the information, but still it was like double what we would normally do on like a pre-COVID Thursday. And I was like, wow, this is just a lot. And apparently starting Monday in Michigan, there's now an edict that you must wear face masks in public. They're mandating face masks in public, which I think is dope because I prefer that people all wear masks, so maybe we can try to get back to some semblance of normal life. But one of the requirements that they're saying is that businesses have to refuse entry or refuse service to people who aren't wearing masks. So now I'm like, do I have to be a bouncer? Like, do I have to be an enforcer of this situation? You know me, Kenny. Like, am I an enforcer?
No. You can be a passive aggressor if you're annoyed, but you're not an enforcer.
Yeah,
And the
exactly.
other
And
problem
like,
is
I
you
don't want to
let.
just have to like passive aggressively stare at someone into wearing a mask.
Well, also, like, I mean, I'm not saying that this is like everywhere, but like in Scotland, anyway, in Glasgow, it's like people just wear the masks. Like, because like I think it was as of yesterday, we're recording this on Saturday. As of yesterday, you have to wear face masks in shops now. Like that's. And we'd been told a week before it will happen from this date. My friend
Because we
Beckett.
were supposed to before, like during the stay-at-home order, I know that like you were supposed to wear them in stores, and they said that you were supposed to, but like a lot of people do, but a lot of people don't. And I would say it's maybe a little over half of the people that I've seen come into work have been wearing them, but there have been a lot of people who haven't too. So I'm very intrigued how, what day is it? It's Saturday. I'm working a few hours tomorrow night, and I'm kind of curious how that's gonna go.
Well, I was going to say, because, like, I've not really heard anything in Scotland about anybody really refusing, but in America, you guys are so batshit crazy that,
Yeah,
like.
someone in Flint got shot. Like a customer service person working at a store got shot because a customer was angry because they wanted them to wear a mask, and like people will lash out, and it's this whole big political thing here. It's just insane to me.
Well, sometimes in America, it's like you get some mad extremist people who, like, if they're told to do something, they feel like it's like breaching their rights.
No, that's exactly what it is. Oh, also the government's trying to control you by making you wear a mask and something about artificial intelligence. I saw some conspiracy theory that I didn't really understand.
One of the dogs that Hulk goes and plays with, like his owner, her mum is like from America, and she like came over to Scotland like a month ago and just decided to like go on booking.com and book a hotel in Loch Lomond. She was like, I'm just gonna go. I don't care. I don't care about lockdown. I don't believe in coronavirus. I think it's a hoax." And she goes all the way to Loch Lomond and they're not open. And then she like cuts a bad review to them on their
Well,
like
'cause
page.
nothing's open right now, right?
Yeah,
Like
nothing. So some people just believe it's a hoax, but I think I did see a thing that I thought was quite funny about the idea that, like, over here, the face mask's been introduced from yesterday, and it's like face masks being introduced now is kind of like putting on a condom at the baby shower. It's like,
yeah.
it's so
But
far. But I mean, look, I get
I mean,
it.
better late than never, right? Like at least if you can like try to curb the spread slightly now. Like I was gonna say sorry for getting political, but I don't feel like this is political. I feel like this is just a public health common sense situation. But yeah, like I don't know. I would like for some sort of normalcy to return at some point, and if we have to wear masks, then that's fine. And like I've ordered some cute ones, and I have, you know, some superhero ones and some Star Wars ones, and I'm just kind of gonna rock them as fashion and go with it is kind of my plan.
I ordered a Golden Girls face mask because I just thought it was really funny. So that's what I'm gonna wear. But yeah, so it's there was a point. Can't remember what it was. I was gonna ask you a couple of questions about coronavirus related things. Obviously, SummerSlam is gonna be at the PC. I think AEW something came out today or yesterday, but it's like the Jacksonville Jaguars who play at the field adjacent to Daly's place. And they're going to be coming back as of like September, I think it is. So yeah, the Jacksonville Jaguars announced that they expect no more than 25% capacity at TIAA Bank Field for the season. There's a preseason game on August 29th, and then the regular season will be September 13th. And a 25% capacity for the field would mean 16,791 fans spaced out across the 71,000 capacity, everyone required to wear masks and follow CDC guidelines. Yeah, so I guess my question was going to be, do you think, like, if wrestling opened up and people were like, hey, come to arenas, we just want you to wear masks, like, would you go, would you not go, where would you sit on it?
I don't know. Like, right now, it would kind of depend on, I guess, the environment, too. Like, if it's an arena that's outdoors, I would feel a little bit better about that if there were proper distancing and stuff in place. Like, if everyone were required to wear masks, if everyone, you know, was being careful and was away from each other and wearing masks and was outside, then I would feel relatively okay going. But I would still be pretty hesitant about it. Like, I know some of the indie shows that are going on, like GCW holding some outdoor events, and I mean, some places are just holding indoor events and saying that they're distancing. And like, I don't know if you've ever been to an independent wrestling show, but I just doubt that's possible. But like some of the outdoor ones, like I might consider going to that. Like, I've been to a couple outdoor events already, not wrestling events, but just, you know, things that have gone on where I've been able to be away from people at a safe distance and whatnot. So maybe, but I wouldn't really want to go in Florida right now, because Florida's a nightmare.
Florida, yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, I think if I was an old person, right, if I was like 75 years old, I think part of me would just go, do you know what, I'm going to the beach. I'm like 75. I'm not sitting in a house anymore. Like, if I die, I die. And I think there is probably that. I think a lot of people are just really sick of what they're having to do. And I get that people do need to just adhere to what's going on. But like somebody, who was it? I'm sure we read it in the podcast. Like somebody famous had put a thing out about like Anne Frank had to sit in a cupboard for like 2 years with like no food. And we get to just like sit at home, and some people get paid to sit at home. And just,
I don't even remember that. But I mean, it's a good point.
Because I think it's good that there's going to be an option of outdoor stuff if you can do it. I think, because I mean, do you find with the shows as they are now, WWE and AEW, with the kind of crew as crowd, is that kind of, does that feel normal to you now, or are you getting sick of it? Like, is it affecting?
I'm so used to it. Like, I think I would feel even more used to it if we weren't watching retro every week and I saw wrestling with a proper crowd. Like, if I weren't watching those all together. Like, it's a very weird juxtaposition, right? Like, to go from watching current product to like watching retro, where the fans are just rabid and everyone has signs and it looks crazy and alive and blah, right? And like, it almost weirds me out when I watch shows with proper crowds now. Like, I almost get nervous about it, which is a weird side effect of this pandemic, that like just seeing a crowd now makes me anxious. So yeah, but it doesn't bother me to watch wrestling in front of just the crew or like a very small crowd. But I think that's probably also partially because I'm used to watching independent shows like in person with sometimes not a lot of people, but also like watching IWTV and whatnot, which I haven't been doing as much lately, but like, you know, watching certain shows on IWTV and stuff, like I'm kind of used to seeing crowds that might be smaller, right? So just in terms of how I watch wrestling, it doesn't bother me that it's not in a big arena. But I know, like, for people like yourself, you're more about like the production and the spectacle and the bigness of everything. So has it gotten any more normal to you, or are you just like really, really tired of it? Where are you at with it?
It's become normal and it doesn't bother me. I think the thing that I find difficult is that it's very difficult to tell what's working right now. Like, mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk about the shows in a minute. Fault of the performer, but I really felt like Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho would have worked 100 times more for me in front of a crowd, because they're both such like crowd wrestlers. You know what I mean? Like, Jericho's going to always want to get the heat. Orange Cassidy knows his spots to get people to go crazy for him. So I think there's matches sometimes and performers and situations where you kind of go, Oh, it would have been so good in front of a crowd. But like, it has been kind of normalized. But I think if you're like WWE or AEW, I mean, it must be difficult to kind of know what's working a lot of the time, because you can look at ratings and stuff, but like, you're not, a lot of times in the past, wrestlers would get over in front of a crowd, and that would then, like, fans at home would then react to the person that is perceived to be being over, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, I think we talked about that last week, how the crowd is more curated now. Like, you can't judge it like a crowd. You have to judge it as part of the production and part of what the company wants you to think. So when I see people cheering for Orange Cassidy and going crazy for Orange Cassidy in the crowd right now, as it stands, when it's a bunch of other wrestlers, yes, of course they're going crazy for him because he's great and he's very well liked and he's awesome at what he does, and he 100% deserves that praise. But it's also because they know that he is the babyface and they have to cheer that way. So it doesn't feel, if you think about it, it doesn't feel quite as organic. If you don't think about it too hard and you don't do what we're doing right now and like microanalyze it, which is our job, so it's fine. But if you just kind of watch it as a wrestling program, I don't think it feels false most of the time. Like, sometimes the NXT crowds, when they start weird chants, like Fight Forever, when it's like people who should not be fighting forever, sometimes that feels a little false and forced. But that's, you know, that's WWE for you, right? Like, and that's not even shade to them. It's just that everything is very sanitized and very, very produced there, more than it is in AEW, that lets things breathe a little bit more. But yeah, like, it's a bummer. Like, I wish that we could have that crowd response, because I think wrestling is so built on the reaction between the crowd and the performers. And right now there's just a piece of that that's broken because coronavirus is awful. And we're just kind of doing what we can right now, right?
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing I want to ask you before we talk about the Wednesday shows is, I think Sean Ross Sapp had reported it, a few other places have picked up on it as well, that there is due to be a network special potentially on August 30th, which is the Sunday after SummerSlam. And the rumor mill says that it might be Evolution 2. Do you think this is the time to do Evolution 2? Would you rather they waited? And I've got to ask, like, I mean, is it the obvious answer of what you want to see as the main event of that show? Or is there something else that you think should be the, you know, the big match?
I mean, I think the time to do Evolution 2 was over a year ago, but if we can get it on August 30th, then yes, please give me Evolution 2. It is way overdue, especially considering how many women are absolutely killing it every week. Like, I haven't been watching Raw and SmackDown a whole bunch, but just following what's been going on there, it seems like there is some good stuff happening in terms of the women's divisions. Like, Asuka's an awesome champion, and Bayley's turned into an awesome champion, which is great. Sasha and Bayley have absolutely been killing it. And I mean, you could just do Evolution 3 soon too. Why not? You have time to make up for, like, a whole history of your company. So yeah, I want it, basically, is the answer there, because of course I do. And I mean, the obvious main event is the obvious main event that you're thinking, Sasha and Bayley. Is that it?
Yeah, Sasha and Bayley. Or is it too soon to do that? I mean, yeah.
I don't want them to break up right now. I think they're really, really good. And I mean, you don't want a tag team to be together too long to where the breakup feels like a relief. Like, you want that perfect, like, Shield level moment where you're not expecting it and it's heartbreaking and it's heart-wrenching and it's all this stuff and it comes out of nowhere and it makes you feel all the feelings. So if they want to go that way right now, they could, but I just think Sasha and Bayley have been really, really great as tag team champions from what I've seen of them, and it doesn't feel like their act is old yet. It doesn't feel like they've really established themselves as champions for that long. I would kind of like to see them have a longer title reign. So maybe save Sasha and Bayley for, I don't know, another big pay-per-view. Maybe save it for WrestleMania, because that could be a WrestleMania match for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it could go on. They've proved every week that they are killing it. I don't know what the thing about Evolution 2, I guess, is how do you judge it? I mean, is it a thing of they're just going to do Evolution shows from now on and that's it? That'd be good. Or is it like, this has to do really well? And if it has to do really well, then it has to be a big match. But, I mean, they've got a lot of people right now. They've got Asuka, who's getting big. They've got Bayley and Sasha. They've got people in NXT they could use. They've not really done anything with Shayna yet, who's kind of waiting in the wings for reasons unexplained.
Yeah, what's that all about? Where is Shayna Baszler?
On
Main
main
event?
event? Main event, yeah.
That's not great, is it?
No, it is not. But yeah, I would like to see Evolution 2. I mean, selfishly, I would rather it happen in front of a crowd. I think that
would
be
rather everything happen in front of a crowd. But what I mean is,
I think the Evolution 2 would all, because if you're doing it on the network, right, you can pretty much do it whenever you want. Like, you can announce it on a Friday and do it on a Sunday if you want to. There's mm-hmm. no like pay-per-view stuff. You don't need to get providers to set it up. So like, to me, Evolution 2 would be a really great like first event back. Like, you know, say it's just like 200 people in the Performance Center, or 150, or 100. That would be a great show to come back on. So I don't know if I would sort of blow it straight away, because, you know, because the other thing is, if they're doing SummerSlam on August 23rd, are they really going to build it well if it's a week after? That's something that...
Probably not. I mean, like, the timing of it could probably be better. Maybe they should wait until September or something like that. Just make that their September pay-per-view.
Yeah, I'd be all for it. I saw someone ask a question today, and I don't really know the answer to it. Somebody had said, you know, if we're still in this scenario in late December, should they still do a Royal Rumble in January? And I don't really know what the answer is, because, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you... Maybe you just... I think by that point, we will hopefully know where things are. So, mm-hmm. like, if we're in December and there is no chat of a vaccine, you just got to do the Royal Rumble. But, like,
yeah.
If there's chat that, like, a vaccine has been confirmed that it will work and it will be widely available by March, I don't know if in 2021 you just move some stuff around and do Rumble and Mania later in the year. Because I almost think, like... WrestleMania this year is like a really weird thing that we'll always remember. Like, remember mm-hmm. that WrestleMania during quarantine?
Where it was an empty arena. I mean, and it was before they even put, you know, crew people in the crowd, so it was just silent.
It was just alone with your own thoughts. Which is not a good place
to meet.
The
best opening video package of all time.
It was a very good opening video package that led us then into Performance Center.
I'm still obsessed with it.
It was very fun. I really wish they had a different one for the second night, but I get it.
Yeah. I understand that, but also I got to watch the one again, so I appreciated that about it.
Okay, so before we talk about the specifics of NXT and Dynamite, or Great American Bash and Fyter Fest, did you think there was a show that was better? NXT, again, won the ratings by, like, I think it was like 35, 40,000 viewers, and then AEW won the 18 to 49 demo, kind of pretty much identical to last week. Did you have a show that you preferred? Do you think one of the shows was clearly above the other, or were they kind of on an even keel?
I thought AEW was a better show. I enjoyed AEW while I was watching it a little bit more than I enjoyed NXT while I was watching it. It seemed to have a little more consequence to everything that happened. I mean, not a ton. Like, there were some matches that were just kind of there or were just kind of fine. But I think NXT felt a little bit more uneven. It felt like there were just like some squash matches or some things that just kind of came out of nowhere that I actually was thinking, like, there were a couple matches on NXT that I was like, Kenny is not going to appreciate that these matches existed this week and had to sit through them. And I don't think I'm wrong about that. So I think AEW had less of that, and I think it moved along a little bit better. But I thought both were good shows. Like, I'm not saying that to say that NXT was bad, and the matches that you would not appreciate so much, I'm fine with. It's fine. Like, it's wrestling. It's fine. Like, I'll watch some wrestlers wrestle, even if I don't really care that much about them. But yeah, like, I thought AEW was better. Which one did you prefer, if any?
Yeah, I slightly preferred AEW. I think the difficulty for me was, and I think I'm in the minority here, I was slightly underwhelmed by Cassidy and Jericho. And I think I'm the only one, because I think everybody else...
I was a little bit too.
Oh, thank God. I was really, really hoping that you'd at least be able to understand where I was coming from. I think
no,
it was just...
No, like, it's... I liked it a lot.
What
and
was it?
It was really good.
Why was it underwhelming a little bit?
I don't know. Like, I was trying to figure it out, and I was almost going to rewatch the match before we recorded, and then I didn't do that because I watched Drag Race instead. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to put my finger on what it was, and I don't know if it was just that I was in a mood. I don't know if I was tired. I don't know if maybe my expectations were just too high. I'm not sure.
I don't.
Like, Orange Cassidy works really, really well with people who are great wrestlers. And Orange Cassidy's a great wrestler. but maybe Chris Jericho just, maybe their styles just didn't align quite as well. I thought it was a great match. I did think it was really, really
Ton
good,
of fun.
but I didn't think it was anything near like Pac versus Orange Cassidy.
Yeah, and I guess that bar, along with Jericho tweeting out saying this is, I mean, it was a good match, right? But like Jericho said, it was like one of his favorite matches of his career. I don't think it was that good. Like, I don't think it was like, I feel like in 3 years' time, for example, if we are talking about like, oh, what are the best Orange Cassidy matches in AEW? I don't think we'll be talking about this one. I
Well, I
think
think
that.
it might be one of Chris Jericho's better matches. I don't think it's one of Orange Cassidy's.
But even with Jericho, I don't think,
I
and I
mean, I know
know.
Chris Jericho's had some like great matches. I'm not trying to disparage him or anything like that,
I mean,
but
maybe he means technically. I guess it's just more whenever Jericho says this is one of my, like when he said, you know, Spring Stamp, not Spring Stampede, Stadium Stampede. Being a wrestling fan for a long time is really hard. Stadium Stampede, when he like said, you know, put that big thing out saying like this is one of the best things I've ever done. And then it was. It like 100% reached that bar that he'd put out. I just felt like Jericho's tweet was a little bit like when you used to hear, we're going to have a major announcement tonight. And then it's an ECW belt from 20 years ago. But we'll get to
or
that.
like when a company promotes the greatest wrestling match of all time.
Yes, exactly that. Well, let's talk about NXT first, Great American Bash Night 2. We kick it off with Candice LeRae and Mia Yim in a street fight that goes about 15 minutes. Candice LeRae gets the win. I thought they worked really hard and I thought it was decent. Maro was a bit much for me towards the end because he was like, you know, this is only ever the second street fight in the women's division. And I was like, they're wrestlers. They can do a street
Yes,
fight.
correct.
They do not, like, and I know what he
But
meant
I
by
don't
it.
know if you understand though, Kenny, that Candice LeRae is one of the wrestlers, and I just have this theory about NXT that they just treat Candice LeRae like she's some tiny doll or something, and that's what they seem to think that she is, because I swear it's always when Candice LeRae is involved that they seem to forget that women can just be people now.
Yeah, just like I didn't buy, like they worked hard for 15 minutes. They were trying to put together something memorable. I thought they did a good job. It was one of the best things Candice has done on her run because she's not really got to do a lot. But you know, it was really good. And but yeah, I just thought some of the commentary I was just like quite patronizing towards her. I didn't really understand why. But what did you think of the match?
I liked it a lot. I thought it was great. I really like both of them, and it was nice to get to see them do stuff, you know? Like it was nice to see a street fight with Candice LeRae getting to actually be Candice LeRae and getting to actually do things as a wrestler, which is like the commentary didn't grate on me as much as it did on you, but I did notice that they're still doing that like hashtag women's brand evolution, and it seems well meaning, especially from Moro. It seems well meaning to kind of put over the fact that like, yeah, women can do stuff now, and that's really cool, and we have a street fight, and this is special because they're the hashtag making history or whatever. But calling attention to that so loudly does feel a bit patronizing at this point, because booking a street fight doesn't seem that crazy anymore, right? Like if there's a women's cage match, it doesn't seem that crazy anymore the way it did 5 years ago. So that was a bit much, but I did think the match was really good, and I thought the finish was interesting with both of them just like being down and Candace's arm being over Mia, so that when Candace like bragged about beating Mia Yim later, it was like, well, like you
Kinda, yeah.
did, but at the same time, it was you were both down and your arm happened to be on top of her, which I was wondering if they were almost going to say that it was like a double pin or something, but I guess no part of Mia was covering Candace, so that was okay.
I guess they can come back to it if they want to come back to it based on that.
Yeah, they can. But I thought they worked really hard and I thought it was good. And it was a good opener. Like, I think NXT was very much like it started out really well and then, like, it dipped a lot for me. And then, like, it came back up toward the end.
Yeah, and I know that you're thinking that the three matches in a row were probably going to be like, well, no, I mean mainly Bronson Reed and Tony Nese and Johnny Gargano and Isaiah Swerve Scott. I mean they were fine, but yeah, you're right. I mean I was just like, okay, fine.
Like, why is this happening?
Yeah, I mean like I think it's just like you know a word that you use quite a lot about shows is urgency, and like this some of the stuff on this felt like it felt like they knew. I'm not even saying this is a bad thing because they didn't throw everything, but like they made sure they had a really good opener and they made sure they had a really good main event, and that was going to be the show, and that was kind of the thing that propped it together. I did think it was really cute that Bronson Reed put a tweet out where, this is the only thing I have to say about the match, but he put a tweet out where he said, bucket list item just happened. I got to do a bionic elbow on a Great American Bash. So
Aw,
that was
that's
nice.
cute.
And he
That
beat
is
Tony Nese.
nice. He did.
Okay,
Tony
well,
Nese still has abs.
he does. He does.
I like Bronson Reed. I like Tony Nese fine. I wasn't incredibly into the match just because
Do you think
why
it
would I be?
is there an idea that, like, and I'm not saying this is the case, I'm just kind of throwing it out there, you know, the idea that they're doing the Great American Bash and they're putting this kind of big thing on, that you kind of then expect the show to have a lot of urgency throughout it?
You would think so, right? Like it should feel like a takeover level show if you're going to be putting that on. I mean, it just felt like an episode of NXT, which is fine to just feel like an episode of NXT. I like episodes of NXT. There's nothing wrong with episodes of NXT. But to be saying, like, we're putting on the Great American Bash and it's this big night and it's this epic thing that is totally not in retaliation to Fyter Fest, not at all. What are you talking about? They're totally unrelated. It just kind of feels like they didn't have anything epic that they built because they didn't really build Great American Bash because they only started promoting it very recently.
I mean, I will give Triple H credit. He did say in a media interview, like, he basically confirmed that it was a retaliation. And he was like,
Oh, did he
this is,
finally?
yeah, he was like, this has always happened, though. Like, Clash of Champions on TBS, you know, went up against WrestleMania 4 on pay-per-view. I mean, WWF were the first to do it, to try and fuck people. So,
I mean, like, I don't have a problem with them even trying to retaliate. I think it drives up interest in both shows. It's ludicrous to try to pretend that it's not related to the fact that they were putting on Fyter Fest. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I thought Bronson Reed Tony Nese was the one match on the show that kind of felt like it belonged on, like, a pre-taped week after Takeover NXT from like a year ago,
Yeah,
like one of
kind
those.
of.
Then we got Johnny Gargano and Isaiah Swerve
I
Scott.
appreciate the effort that they went to like try and build a story with Bronson Reed and Tony Nese. Like a little bit. They had a little bit of a story, and I appreciate that.
They tried. And also, before the Gargano match, we had the Robert Stone and Aaliyah segment. And Robert Stone was going up to Shotzi Blackheart and try to get her to join, and she doesn't want to. And then he accidentally threw a coffee at Kelly and Dane. And it was a kind of comedy sketch. Did this one work for you?
I loved it. I loved it. I love Robert Stone. I think he's hilarious. And him getting run over with a tank was very humorous to
Eat my
me.
tank.
Like, I love Shotzi Blackheart and her tank. And I think using the tank to inflict injury on Robert Stone, I found very humorous. So, yeah, I'm here for it. Like, does it make Shotzi maybe a little bit of a dick for running over a man? Maybe. But he's Robert Stone. And that's kind of why he's there, is to be run over and then put in the trash.
She's got to be thinking, this tank can be like a merch gold mine for me if I get really super over.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think it's gonna work. The tank and the helmet too.
Yeah, tank in the helmet. Johnny Gargano got the win over Scott, Isaiah Swerve Scott.
Do you think we're gonna get like Aaliyah and Shotzi Blackheart now, the way we got like Aaliyah and Rhea Ripley?
Probably, yeah. And then maybe this one actually does result in Shotzi joining, because that's maybe a story that she could do, because she's more mid-card. It could work.
I'm kind of here for it, honestly.
Any thoughts on Johnny Gargano getting the win over Mr. Swerve?
I mean, it was good. They're both good wrestlers. I enjoyed the wrestling quite a lot, but there was just no part of my mind that thought that Isaiah Swerve Scott was going to beat Johnny Gargano because he's Isaiah Swerve Scott and he's Johnny Gargano. So I thought it was good. And I mean, they gave Isaiah Swerve Scott lots in the match. Like, he got to do a lot of cool things and he got to look really good. But it's just when the outcome seems pretty obvious, it lacks a little bit of drama. Like, I would have been shocked if Isaiah Swerve Scott beat Johnny Gargano here, and that might have been interesting. I don't know. But like, it was good and it was fine, and it gave Johnny Gargano a reason to gloat, I guess. Like, I don't want Johnny Gargano to just like go away or be lost in the ether or, you know, just lose a bunch because he's Johnny Gargano and he's awesome. Like, I want him to be the awesome villain that he is right now.
It was fine. It was fine. I do want to very quickly say that congratulations to Tegan Scott. Tegan Scott? No, just talked about Scott. Tegan Knox, who came out on Instagram, it
Oh, did
appears.
she?
She yeah, just a photo of her and a lady saying life is good with some pride colours. So
That's cool.
I, as the Columbo of Inside the Ropes, have deduced that she has come out in some form. So good for her.
It does seem that way.
It
does. That
does
seem to be indicated there. Well, good for her.
And do you know what? In a world of wrestling, I don't know if being a lesbian is not the worst idea, given what some of the men got up to, as we have seen. Then we got the Phantasma faction against Drake Maverick and Breezango. I know this is not new information, but like when I was watching this match, which was fun, I was like, Tyler Breeze looks like someone who used to be Tyler Breeze, and they've done like a Where Are They Now on him, and he's now a school teacher. That's the haircut.
Kinda, yeah.
So yeah, any thoughts on this? On obviously Phantasma's faction got the win, but did it thrill you? Did it make you quiver? How did you feel about it?
I mean, this is definitely the point where the show picked up for me again, because bless their hearts, they tried to have a little bit of like backstage drama with Bronson Reed and Tony Nese, and also with Johnny Gargano and Isaiah Swerve Scott to like set up those matches. So I appreciate that they weren't just like thrown out there cold. But this has an ongoing story, right? Like Drake Maverick and Santos Escobar were in the finals of the Cruiserweight tournament. They fought tooth and nail. They have been having dissension. Drake Maverick keeps coming to try to attack three men, even though he's a tiny person. I guess he's valiant, maybe not very smart, but valiant, and we appreciate valiance. I love Breezango with all of my heart and soul, so I was happy to see them and gutted that they didn't get the win, of course, because of course I was going to be upset about that. I loved Breezango's entrance. I like when they mock other people with their entrances, and I like that they had the masks on. We got a Los Conquistadors reference, which was funny, but then they took the masks off and they were like, no, it's time to be serious now, we're going to go do some wrestling. And then they did, and they were really, really good, and I loved this match. I thought it was a lot of fun, and Drake Maverick losing makes sense, right? Like, you want to build up Legado del Fantasma, I think is what they're called. Like, you want to build them up right now. They should be a powerhouse stable. They should be a dominant faction. And I like that there is a dominant faction being built in NXT that, I mean, I guess they're also heels, so I wouldn't put them up against Undisputed Era, but it maybe will allow Drake Maverick and Breezango to be a team some more. I don't know. Like, but I thought the match was a lot of fun and everyone did really, really well in it. And I was more invested because there was a story, right? And there was a very clear baby face and there was a very clear heel. And I really wanted the baby faces to win and then they didn't. And my hopes and dreams were dashed and I felt feelings. And that's what wrestling's supposed to do.
yeah, it was a fun match. My Drake Maverick views just seem to be compounded more week by week because he becomes more generic babyface every week. And I don't know.
He kind of is, which just, I'm ready for that to not be him.
Like, if we don't want to see him doing another video, I don't mean that in a sarky way, but like, he is at his best. And look through his entire career, he is a prick. That's what he's great at doing. And look, I get the Valiant thing, I think worked in the tournament, but it's done. Please move on.
I feel like now that this story feels over, you know, like it feels like it is finished. It feels like the bad guys have won. The bad guys have triumphed. I don't think that we need to see Drake Maverick challenging Santos Escobar again. I'm ready for a new cruiserweight person to maybe kind of take up the challenge there. I don't know who that's going to be, but I think that they have enough people on their roster that I'm sure you could choose somebody. But yeah. Like, I'm ready for the story to kind of split and go into a different direction, but I like what we got.
Yeah, I hope they do some stuff in the next few weeks to kind of give us more non-wrestling stuff from the Phantasma faction, because I like Joaquin Wilde getting to do something different. Mendoza is decent, and I think that you just don't want the danger of them just becoming like just wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Just
like three brown dudes together.
Yeah. So I hope they do some kind of on-location stuff and just kind of give them something to do. You must have been happy, though, because you got to see Mercedes Martinez's NXT debut, officially, but unofficially not, against Santana Garrett. She got the win. You must have been very happy.
I was very happy. I am always happy to see Mercedes Martinez. I don't know if you know this, Kenny. Big fan of hers. Big fan of Mercedes.
You've never
Martinez
mentioned it to me.
I know. I'm sure this is shocking news to anyone who's ever met me and heard me talk about Mercedes Martinez ever. Love her so much. I have a fear with Mercedes Martinez. I think the debut was fine. I think it was against Santana Garrett, so it was never going to be that good. That's mean, but also a little bit true.
It was always going to be fine.
It was always going to be fine. Yeah. My fear is that I got Dominic Dijakovic vibes from Mercedes Martinez. And we know that I'm a big fan of Dominic Dijakovic too. So what I don't mean to disparage him, but what I mean by that is I was a big fan of Dominic Dijakovic when he was kind of like shit talking people in almost like his more jobber role before his proper like Feast Your Eyes debut. And then when they debuted him, he was just angry dude who was big, right? And then that didn't end up working out super well for him. He did some awesome stuff with Keith Lee, and he's been great, and he's had some really killer matches and all that stuff. Like, he's not like, just been a tragic story of like an NXT failure. It's not that at all. But he does kind of seem like he's on the back burner because he was just like big, generic, angry dude with a catchphrase, right? And Mercedes here, like her old theme, I thought was like way better than this theme, but this one is kind of going for like more stoic veteran, I suppose. And she's just more of an angry lady. And it seems like she's been told to just like be angry and serious. And like it takes a lot to be able to pull off angry and serious and still make that more interesting than when you were like just a badass. And it almost just seems like they've stripped part of her character away. And I don't want that for her. I want her to be Mercedes Martinez in all of her glory and all of her shit talking and all of her amazingness. Like, that's what I love about Mercedes Martinez. And I don't want it to be another situation where they're like, yeah, but this is what you are now. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Because again, the difficulty that we are seeing time and time again with so many wrestlers in NXT is that, like, what they really need to be doing is preparing these people for the main roster. I know you hate when I say it, but they do. If these people want to make big money, that's what the preparation needs to be. And a lot of times they don't do that. They just kind of make people like indie stars. And that's great, but then they're not prepared when they go up. I mean, Matt Riddle actually is probably one of the better comparisons of somebody who they did a pretty good job with. Of kind of getting him over and making him be a charismatic guy with a character.
I
So
mean, you
there's.
say making him be a charismatic guy. They let Matt Riddle be Matt Riddle.
Yeah, and but they.
Like, they let Kevin Owens be Kevin Owens. They
Yeah,
let Samoa Joe be Samoa Joe. Like, that's why it
but
worked.
sometimes it's not as easy as that. Sometimes it's not just letting somebody be somebody. Sometimes it's like, okay, you've signed this person because they're a very talented wrestler, but you need to come up with a gimmick or a character that's going to get them over. And with Matt Riddle and Kevin Owens, it was fairly straightforward because Kevin Owens was essentially an extension of Kevin Steen, and Matt Riddle was the exact same Matt Riddle he was doing on the Indies. So they were pretty straightforward. And I think that I mean, look at Ricochet. Look at Ricochet as a prime example. When he went up, what had they done to develop him as a character in NXT? Nothing. He was just a really good wrestler who had some killer matches, and that was kind of it. And now he's in the main roster and he's floundering because there's nothing there. And it's like, if I was a wrestler and I was able to, because look, you can never, maybe you do just end up getting floundered and that's it. But like, if I was a wrestler and I ended up at NXT, my main thing would be like, how can I become a character that Vince is going to get, that the audience are going to get, and that like people are going to be talking about? People are going to be like sharing my stuff on Twitter or like talking about me. Because that's, if you're in WWE, that's gonna be what it is. You know, if that's not what you are, then it's, you know, someone else is probably better. But I think that is kind of, to piggyback on what you were saying about Mercedes, it's like, you know, Dominic Dijakovic is a guy who every time he has a match, he's great. He's great. But they just, for whatever reason, don't seem to. It's like Triple H is in this ultimate battle between wanting to create this great wrestling show. But then he also has to get these people ready for the next place. And I don't feel like a lot of people are made to be ready enough.
No, and I mean, I know that it's just one match with Mercedes Martinez, and like, she is great. She's so great. Like, if they let her wrestle and do great things, she will be great at them, right? Like, that's just, she is, I don't think she's capable of being bad at wrestling because she's just so good at it.
Do you know what role I'd like to have seen her in? I know you can't do it now. I'd have loved to have seen her be like Dakota Kai's heavy.
Yeah,
Like, she could have been
that could
really
have
good
been
in that.
great. I
I
mean, I
think.
think Raquel Gonzalez does a really good job too. But yeah, like the thing I would, this is a thing, I would have rather seen Mercedes Martinez debut on the main roster than in NXT. And I think that there's a way to do that. And I think that her coming in as a veteran, as like a veteran presence of independent wrestling, I think could have been a really interesting story on the main roster because I feel like the main roster still needs more women way more desperately than NXT. NXT feels very crowded. And if we're going to get Mercedes Martinez in title contention and she's going to be in the main event scene, then I am so here for it. You have no idea. I want to see Mercedes Martinez versus Io Shirai, and I want to see Mercedes Martinez beat her. Not like immediately, but that's what I want to see because she is my favorite and I am super hella biased. But I worry that if she's in NXT for a while and then they call her up because she does well in NXT, but she's never like in the main event scene and she's never their girl, then if she gets to the main roster, like you're saying, see, you're putting all these sad thoughts in my head. If she gets to the main roster, then I just worry that they would treat her like Ruby Riott, and that's not great. Ruby Riott's one of the best, man. And like, she's just losing all the time. Because why? Why? I don't understand.
Well, also because the idea should be that, like, in an ideal world, Vince and who and everybody up in the main roster kind of goes, I want that person because I have an idea for them. Not just like, okay, I'm going to take these people, but I don't have an idea for them yet. I just want to have them. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think Mercedes would benefit from being around a faction or a group or a team, or I think she would bounce off people well. So we shall see.
We shall see. I just really hope things go well for her because I love her so much. And I just don't want her to be like that veteran that loses, like just to put people over. Like I want her to be top of the world.
You don't want her to be Cash Sono.
No, not at all.
Let's talk about the main event. The big jewel title match. Adam Cole, NXT champion against Keith Lee, North American champion. The photo that leaked was correct. Keith Lee went on to...
I was going to ask you if it was correct. So it's funny because like right before I was watching the match, or I think like Thursday morning or something, I woke up and I had avoided spoilers. I had avoided finding out who had won. And like, I just got a new phone. So I haven't set up all the notifications and stuff. And Google News notification, Keith Lee wins, da 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 da. And I was like, great. Awesome. It was still a really good match. Still really enjoyed it. But like, didn't appreciate the heads up phone.
What did you think of Keith Lee now being the double champion? Talk me through your thoughts on the match.
I love it. I love Keith Lee being the double champion. I thought the match was great. I thought they did really well. I don't think it was a surprise that they were going to do really well. I was so 100% behind Keith Lee and not behind Adam Cole because Adam Cole's a prick and Keith Lee's awesome, which also helps, right? Like it's nice to have a rooted interest. And so even though I knew who was going to win, there were moments where there were near falls that I know I would have been losing my mind if I didn't know the outcome of this match. So, and I was still able to get into them, you know, because they did a really good job because they're great at professional wrestling. I think Adam Cole's been champion for so long that him losing the belt now makes sense because I feel like Keith Lee is a worthy person to have both belts. I don't know why they have anyone have both belts right now. I am still very confused about that. I know we had kind of speculated that maybe there would not be a finish or there would be some sort of interference or something like that before the photo came out and we found out that there was going to be a winner. I mean, I think the match was epic enough that it deserved a finish. I just don't understand having both belts on one person, but I guess they can find a way to split it up again. Like they can just tell a story. It's fine. Like I trust NXT more than I would trust the story on like Raw. But yeah, Keith Lee's the right person, I think. And this is another one, like you always say, I wish this would have happened in front of a crowd for him, for his sake, but it still felt really big and it still felt really epic. And I thought the match was awesome and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I liked the match a lot. I will always be the person that doesn't quite understand why everybody loves Adam Cole matches so much. So, to me, I was really happy that Keith Lee won because I'm far more invested in Keith Lee as a character. And him. Mm-hmm. Whenever he has matches, I am automatically more into who he's facing. Like, I was more into Johnny Gargano when they were fighting. I was more into Dominik Dijakovic when they were fighting. And I think the thing with Cole that just doesn't work for me is that it's very 5,000 moves. And it's just never my style. Like maybe that makes me kind of older, I guess. But like, I find whenever I'm watching Cole matches that like, I get exhausted, and I don't feel like I'm still like, what's gonna happen? I'm just like, oh, because the way my brain works, I can't remember any of the sequences. Like I just can't remember them. I can't. Like there'll be moments where I'll remember. Like I'll always remember that the Bailey to Bailey when Bailey beat Sasha. I'll remember when Hogan slammed Andre, but I'll remember all these things, and I find that in the Cole matches so much happens that my brain switches off.
Whereas, I can see that. I think, like, for when I'm watching them, I don't remember necessarily like the specific spots and near falls, but I remember like being on the edge of my seat with enjoyment. All the near falls.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I remember the enjoyment of it when I was watching it. But you're not wrong about it being a lot of spots. And it, if that's not, you know, like if that's not your style, it's not your style. It's fine.
Yeah, and I think Keith Lee is far more my kind of style, because like, I just, he's much more my up my alley. So him winning, I think, kind of off what you were saying, I think it's the right time because Adam Cole's had the belt for so long. He's beaten everybody. What else is there to do? And I think that, you know, as much as we were talking a minute ago about, you know, the idea of are they getting people ready for the main roster and being worried about people, they've knocked it out of the park with Keith Lee. They really have. Because even on commentary, they were saying at one point, like Tom Phillips was saying that something about, oh, you know, Keith Lee's caused some problems for Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns in the last year. Like, that's a great sentence to be able to say about
somebody.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I don't like the double title win thing. It feels a bit, let's get a rating by putting on a big match kind of thing. But at the same time, I think the plus point coming out of it is that Keith Lee got a massive win. He got to hold both belts. And yeah, he just feels bigger than ever. So and I think him and, you know, we obviously saw at the end, Karrion Kross and Scarlett watching the celebration, and like Karrion Kross and Keith Lee feels like a big match, and it feels like it's not gonna, it feels far more my kind of wrestling match. So I think I'm very excited about that part of it. I don't mean to diminish Adam Cole and any of this stuff. It's just, it's kind of like Young Buck stuff sometimes for me. But I thought the match was great, and big win for Keith Lee. So at least they finished the show on a high after the lull in the middle for a little bit.
Yeah, and I think having Karrion Kross and Scarlett watching, it almost, like, I'm kind of glad they didn't interfere, because I think it makes Keith Lee's win feel more epic and feel more special. Like, I've talked about on Retro, on patreon.com/insidetheropes, my misgivings about how The Rock has become champion the past couple times, with so much interference and so much help and it not really feeling like his crowning moment. And I think Keith Lee got that crowning moment because he did beat Adam Cole by himself, baby. And I think that he needed that, right? Like, you don't want it to be on a fluke, and you don't want it to be on something that wasn't definitive, especially if it's your first title win, which for him as NXT champion, this is. So I think having them watch from the rafters or from the skybox or whatever was a nice touch. And I think that because Keith Lee and Karrion Kross obviously have that history with Keith Lee breaking the hourglass and Karrion Kross having that vignette last week about how he didn't forget it and stuff, that is, there's already a story built there. Like, whether Keith Lee or Adam Cole had won that match, I'm sure Karrion Kross could have gone after either of them, but he looked pleased that it was Keith Lee that he wanted to attack, you know, because they have this history. And that makes me more into their story going forward. Like, not just because Karrion Kross is great and Keith Lee is great, but they already have built the germ of a story there, and I hope that it's great.
Let's move on to Fighter Fest Night 2 on Dynamite. They open the show with Paige and Omega against Private Party. Kind of predictably, Omega and Paige retain the titles, but I've seen a lot of people kind of giving this match a lot of praise. I've seen some people saying it wasn't as good as other people think it is. Where do you sit for this match? And, you know, Private Party are a team who get sometimes criticized for being sloppy. Was this a good night for them? Talk me through your thoughts.
I thought it was fine. I thought it was really good. I felt kind of like when I watched Johnny Gargano and Isaiah Swerve Scott, right? Like, it was the really, really important people, Kenny Omega and Adam Page, against someone who is great and who's had wins and is important in their division, Private Party. But there was no part of my mind that thought that Private Party was going to beat Adam Page and Kenny Omega for the titles. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the wrestling. I thought they did well. I think Private Party are good. I don't think they're like outstanding, but I think they're good. And I enjoyed it and it was fine. And Kenny Omega and Adam Page are still the champions and I'm happy about that. But I don't have like major emotional connection to this match, I suppose. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I'm with you. I think it's kind of, it reminded me a little bit of the Best Friends match as well. It's just like they're beating teams who are kind of like not the top teams, but the secondary teams. But like in some
Best Friends, I almost would have been like a little less surprised about just because they're with Orange Cassidy and he's such a big deal.
Yeah, so maybe by default it makes that more. But yeah, I mean, it was fine. I hate Matt Hardy with Private Party. I hate it.
Because I keep forgetting that he's there and then wondering why he's ringside.
I just feel like
it doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah, like it's just like he's. So see, if it was like broken Matt with them, I could almost forgive it. But it's like, I don't know. I don't think it does a lot for Matt Hardy. I don't think it does a lot for Private Party, because like, why are they just hanging about with like 1999 Matt Hardy? Like, I don't get it.
It feels like they just didn't know where to put Matt Hardy on the show. So they were like, I don't know, go sit in the corner over there and Private Party. I mean, this is essentially how they got together, right? Like,
yeah, just backstage there was like, a segment. And
just go sit in the corner over there. And then they did. And now they're pals, apparently, which is fine. Like, I'm all for friendship. But I feel like there are better uses for Matt Hardy.
Yeah, hard agree. We got Joey Janela against Lance Archer. Archer ended up carrying Sonny Kiss at the beginning because he'd beaten him up. And I thought these guys had a pretty hard-hitting match. I know, again, I think this match also has divided opinion, because I know that like Meltzer gave this a pretty favourable rating, I think. And then some people were saying that it wasn't as good. I thought that it was decent. This is just an aesthetic thing. I'm saying the bad thing before I say the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Joey Janela, right, is not a guy who is concerned with being toned, right?
No.
Which is fine. The gear, I feel like he's doing the Jericho thing from like 2009, where like Jericho had trousers on, then he moved to pants, and you were like, why? You're putting on weight, and now you're putting more emphasis on the fact that you're putting on weight, because like Joey Janela is such a cool guy, and like he's so kind of mysterious, and he's, you know, he's the bad boy. He's not the generic guy, and the generic gear I just don't quite get. Maybe, I guess, is it because Sonny Kiss wears pants? I mean, I'm saying British pants, but then he wears a top as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So yeah, so it doesn't even
like a crop top.
Yeah, so it doesn't even match that. So yeah, I don't really get the gear, but I thought he had a good night, and I thought that Lance Archer gave him some good stuff, and it exceeded my very low expectations going into it.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was good when I saw the star rating, which I don't really pay much attention to star ratings because I don't know, I can't be bothered. I was surprised that it was so high, I guess, but like, I'm not in Dave Meltzer's brain. He liked it a lot. Good for him. I also liked it and thought it was fun, but there was no part of my brain that thought that Joey Janela was going to beat Lance Archer. It was obviously more of a showcase for Lance Archer to be big and menacing and murder hockey. And it was, and that's what they did. And they're both real good, and so it was fun.
Then on the show, we had Taz coming out, and he did a pro. So there had been a thing before the show saying there was going to be a big announcement on the show. And they...
was there? Was this supposed to be like a big announcement?
Yep.
Oh.
I should mention right before this, Darby Allin gave me major FOMO by jumping onto that foam pit from like 30 feet.
I want to jump into a foam pit. I want to do it so bad. I miss jumping into foam pits. I used to do that when I was in gymnastics when I was younger, and it was so much fun. I never jumped from that high, though.
I almost want to set up a business where I could do that because it's so fun. But anyway, so Taz comes out, and I'm very curious to get your take on this, because this feels like this, like all the nostalgia that some people have for this, you don't have that nostalgia, so it should be a pretty fresh
0%
perspective. So Taz comes out and he basically says that Brian Cage is already a champion, and he brings out the FTW belt, which he had created in ECW, the Fuck the World Championship. And it was around for about a year in ECW, I think, and then eventually there was a unification match and it kind of went away. Now, apparently,
was it like an officially recognized thing? This wasn't like a $1 million title situation?
No, it was like $1 million. It was defend. I think it was. I didn't really watch ECW, but from what I'm led to believe, tweet me if I'm wrong, and I'll correct it next week. But I think it was similar to the $1 million belt in that it was defended, but it was an unsanctioned championship.
Okay.
It wasn't an ECW official one. So this had been taped before WWE did the MVP's fake US title. I mean, it's not the fake one, but, you know, his own one that will eventually become the official US title, because Apollo Crews has the old one right now, and he is the mm-hmm. champion.
I did have to Google the other day when looking up the belt who was the United States champion.
Fair. And then I think Moose has a TNA title right now, an Impact, that he's using. So there's a lot of kind of like, we have other belts.
Belt thievery.
Yeah. Talk to me about Taz giving Brian Cage the FTW title. any thoughts?
It's fine. I didn't know what it was. It was orange, so I figured it had something to do with Taz, and also Taz was holding it, so that was another clue.
It's the one thing that WWE did not copyright.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that I thought it stood for the win when I saw the title.
Oh, you're adorable. For the win.
But that's what FTW means, right?
No, it stands for fuck the world.
But I didn't know that. I didn't know what it was. So who is a big Taz fan. But of course I would think that. Have you met me?
One would think from you saying that you're innocent, but you're not. So I don't know why you thought it was, you know, what was it, for the win? My God.
Yeah, that's what I thought it meant. And I was confused.
Did you text David?
What?
Did you text David?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay.
I texted someone else who was a really big Taz fan and was just like, is this from ECW? And he was like, yeah, oh my gosh, that's Taz's belt. This is amazing. And I was like, okay, awesome. I'm glad you're happy about it. It's fine. Like, I actively don't care. Like, it doesn't make me think that Brian Cage is in any way a champion. It's just he got a toy and that's cool. I don't want to disparage it. Like, I don't want to... I don't know shit on the fuck the world championship, correct?
Mm-hmm. Although I'm always going to see it as the for the win title now.
I thought it was.
The thing that because I was reading earlier, somebody was like, Meltzer just loves AEW and he never says anything bad. And it's like, on his radio show, he was like, this belt's a bad idea. Like, he was like, this is not good. Because it's like, now there's three singles titles, right? For the guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, are they actually going to like defend it and have it be a thing, or is it just going to go away?
Well, I assume Brian Cage is not going to be successful against Moxley, and then this is going to be his title.
Okay.
I mean,
that's fine if you want to do that. I like the idea of Taz wanting to pass the torch. I think that's a nice idea.
Sure.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of have that with him being with Brian Cage and advocating for him anyway. So I don't know why he needs to have a shiny orange belt. But if you want to have a shiny orange belt, Mr. Machine Cage Man, then, you know, you go right ahead. You do you.
I guess we'll see what they do with it. Maybe they do something cool with it.
I don't think they explained well what it was, though. I think that's one of my criticisms of the segments. And I have enjoyed Taz as Brian Cage's manager quite a lot, so it's not that I'm anti him. I just, when Taz was like, you know, you've seen this belt and you saw this before, and I was like, legitimately never have no idea what this is. If you could explain it to, if you could have told me what it meant, I mean, I know they can't say fuck on television, but if you would have even told me that, like, this was the belt that I held in ECW or some sort of information, that would have been helpful.
My motto in ECW is fuck the world, bleep the F.
Uh-huh.
It's very easy.
Something. We got nothing, and I feel like this is one of those segments that relies on you having nostalgia for ECW, which I have never seen it, so... It just, I don't think that it was well explained for people who didn't know what the title was, as I clearly didn't, because I didn't even know what the word stood for.
Up next on the show was my favorite match on either show, on both shows. The 8-man tag with the Bucks and FTR against the Lucha Brothers and Butcher and the Blade. I thought this was great. It felt like a really big tag team match with all these teams who all are kind of really want to be in title contention, so that kind of made it feel more special. And then in the end, the super kick that changed the flow of the match at the end, and Pentagon Phoenix ended up getting the win over Matt Jackson to give the Lucha Brothers and Butcher and Blade the win. What did you make of the match, and do you like the slow build of dissension between the Bucks and FTR? Is it working for you?
Yeah, it is working for me, actually. I'm happy to see FTR presented as babyfaces in this scenario, because they totally are, right? Like, they came in and they're badass and they just want to win. And I like the fact that, you know, everyone likes them, right? Like, they are very well liked. And them being baby faces who are awesome makes a good deal of sense to me. I don't know if you can understand the level of glee I felt to see a young buck get pinned. Like, I was just so happy about it. I didn't realize that I would be so happy about it, but I was so happy about it. I would have not minded if the Young Bucks and FTR won, I guess. Like, they could have pinned a Lucha Brother or something, and that would have been fine, or they could have pinned a Butcher or a Blade, and that would have been fine. But like seeing a young buck get pinned was just so cathartic because they've been such dicks and I've just hated them so much that I really enjoyed seeing them lose, even if it meant that FTR also lost in the process. And it gives FTR a reason to be annoyed with the Young Bucks, right? And I think they have enough reason because I think the Young Bucks were dicks to them when they introduced themselves the other week. Ugh.
The elitists.
The elitists, they really, really are. But yeah, this match was awesome. Like, it was really, really awesome. And it was very high-paced, and it was spots and spots and spots and all sorts of things. But I think we got a little bit of a glimpse of how FTR are going to work with more like flippy teams, because both the Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks are very flippy teams, right? And FTR are not. They are much more grounded. They are more, you know, just about, you know, pure technical wrestling or whatever. But I think we've seen that that's working very, very well for them in AEW, and all of their matches have been killer. And I just love that they're there, and I love seeing them succeed. And it just makes me really happy to see them doing so well.
It's a good time to be a fan. Yeah, lots of good teams, and I like the story, the FTR Bucks thing, which I assume is going to lead to All Out. I'm here for it. Sign me up.
As long as the Bucks are the heels, they will be in my heart.
Nyla Rose got a win over Kenzie Page and Killian King, but the real big story was after the match when she basically said that everyone's got a manager, or all the great wrestlers have a manager, so she's hired a manager, and that manager is going to help her become the AEW Women's Champion again. Do you have any ideas who you think it could be? And who you want it to be? And what do you think of the idea of Nyla having a manager? Is that something you think she needs?
I don't think it's something she needs. And I feel like we have a lot of managers in AEW. I'm a fan of managers, so I don't mind having a lot of them. But I feel like there are a lot, right? Is it going to be Calm? Is it the obvious choice?
Because I would love it to be Calm. So, I mean, I know Meltzer had said something that it could be Vicky Guerrero.
Okay, I could see that too. I would rather it be Kong, just because I love Kong. I want to see her on TV. But I could see it being Vicky. I don't know why Nyla Rose would hire Vicky Guerrero, though. Like, for what reason?
I mean, I guess she would have to kind of say, you know, she managed a former World Heavyweight Champion, Edge. She was married to a World Heavyweight Champion, so she's got the insider scoop on what it takes to win.
See, I guess I missed. Well, I came into wrestling when Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero were together, so seen her be a manager. But like, that's when I came into wrestling, was seeing Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero. So like, I've seen obviously many clips of Edge and Vicky Guerrero, given that Edge was like one of my faves, and I have two DVDs of him and all that stuff. But I've never watched that through to see how it goes.
Yeah.
So I think of her more as general manager Vicky Guerrero than I do like manager Vicky Guerrero, I guess.
I think Kong's a great shit, but I mean, I guess the problem with Kong is that Kong is basically the elder Nyla Rose in some ways. But then,
which
that
is why
work.
I think in some ways I think that would make sense, though, right? Like,
yeah, I mean,
almost like a passing the torch situation.
Kong would have to kind of be completely okay to just become a talker. Which she look, mm-hmm. I spent a week with her. She is great. She can talk.
Yeah,
she's tremendous. So we'll see where it goes. But Colt Cabana and Brody Lee and Stu Grayson took on SCU in the match that I thought was never going to end. It felt so long. But the Dark Order and Colt Cabana got the win in the end. Talk me through your thoughts.
I still like the Colt Cabana Dark Order story. I am into it. I think it is an interesting thing for Colt Cabana to be doing. I liked this fine. I'm always happy to see Brody Lee wrestle. He makes me so happy just as a person, just for existing. But, you know, like it was kind of filler, right? Like SCU, I kind of forget that they're there a lot of the time. Like
since they lost the tag titles and then had the kind of, is Christopher Daniels going to join the Dark Order or not? They've not really done anything.
Yeah, like I was thinking during the match, I was like, oh yeah, remember when SCU were the tag champions? Because like I barely do. And they just haven't mattered a whole bunch. And I think they're great, but like, you know, the AEW tag division is incredibly stacked, like incredibly stacked. So when your lesser quote unquote tag teams are like including SCU and like Private Party, who are all like real good, it just means you have a really, really stacked tag division, right? And that's a good thing. So this was fine. It was fine. I want the Dark Order to be better than it is, probably. But I want to see more with the Colt Cabana Dark Order story. I'm here for it. I think I might be the only one, but I'm here for it.
What I don't understand is how Colt Cabana can be so bad at acting. Like, I don't, like, I think he's just playing it, like, even the pre-match promo where he's like, okay, Mr. Brody, like, this whole thing basically centers upon Colt Cabana's acting of him being allured or captivated or hesitant of the Dark Order. And he just
he's used to a bigger, more, like, pantomime style of promo and performance, you know?
He just kind of seems aloof to the whole thing. And that's fine, but, like, it's... Yeah, I mean, I think for me, because...
Does it seem like his heart's not in it, do you think?
Yeah, I just don't think... I don't feel like he cares either way. So, like, if I'm looking to him to kind of sell it to me, and I don't feel like he's selling it to me, then, I think the problem for me, and I don't know what the consensus is generally, but, like, because Dark Order already are kind of, like, a hit and miss, and then the Cabana thing, Cabana's not really acting as if he really cares about it. This match felt like, because I was watching this live, so it was like 2:15 in the morning,
right?
And like, it was me and Steve Gunn and Ollie, and we were like, how long has this match been going on? Because it was like the show felt like it had some urgency with a lot of the stuff with the, you know, the 8-man tag and the Taz thing, even though it was weird, felt kind of urgent, and a lot of the stuff felt fairly what's the word, like it had a purpose, but then this just felt like it went on for ages. But yeah, it's not working for me. I hope that I'm somehow captivated by it at some point, but I don't know if the Dark Order are cursed for some reason, like, whenever they seem to get a bit of momentum, something happens. Like, I mean, I do like your thing where you said that Brody Lee not reacting to losing to Moxley is kind of what he had learned from his family. So,
Like, that's my headcanon now, is that's what he learned in the Wyatt family, and so he's just continuing bad behaviors.
But yeah, I guess we'll see where it goes. We got told that next week it's a pretty stacked show on Dynamite. It's the Lucha Brothers against FTR, the Elite against Jurassic Express in a trios match. Cody's going to be defending the TNT title against Sonny Kiss. So that'll be his first big solo.
I'm excited
match.
For that.
Yeah,
I don't know why too. Cody's still dodging Warhorse, though.
It's coming. And Moxley will be...
It's got to be coming, right? Like,
I would imagine so. I'm sure
you've seen all the tweets.
I keep hearing the name. I keep hearing the buzz about it. So, and then Moxley's going to defend the title against Brian Cage in the main event of Fight for the Fallen. The main event was Jericho and Orange Cassidy.
Can we talk about Big Swole and Britt Baker, like, before we get to the main event?
Yes, because obviously, so Big Swole turns up earlier in the show and she is told that she's suspended. But she drove 3.5 hours and they hadn't told her that she was suspended, so they were going to tell her at the gate.
Yeah. It was like they didn't bother texting, they didn't email, they didn't send a fax, they didn't do anything. She gets there and she's just like, I mean, she did show up rather late for work, right? Like, if she's showing up in the middle of the show and she drove 3.5 hours to get there, which I do think is funny, but yeah, then being told that she's suspended and not being allowed in the building, and she's like, this is ridiculous, I don't think that's okay. And apparently Britt Baker has the power to order that Big Swole be suspended because of kidnapping, which, to be fair she
reason.
Did kidnap Britt Baker last week, so that did happen.
My favorite thing, though, because I was going to bring this up at the end, but I'm happy to do it now. The bit that just killed me was when Swole, I think it was after the Dark Order match, actually, Swole snuck up on Britt Baker, and then she, like, threw the towel at Reba, and then Reba slapped Britt in the face.
Reba, whose name is not Reba.
Yeah, but, that's what we call her on the show.
Yeah.
And she ends up slapping Britt in the nose. Any wrestler who ever wants to know how to sell... Watch Britt Baker react to being slapped in the nose.
Well, no, didn't she get a piece of paper thrown at her? Didn't she get, like, the...
No.
Big Swole's, like...
Swole threw the paper at Reba, and then Reba reacted trying to get Swole and ended up slapping Britt in the nose.
Oh, okay, because I thought the piece of paper hit Britt in the nose and she was going crazy about it.
No, because when the piece of paper or towel, whatever it was, hit Reba then reacted trying to hit Swole, but Swole got out of the way,
oh,
so she
okay,
slapped
gotcha.
Britt Baker.
It was brilliant, and it was a callback to Britt Baker's broken nose. Obviously, she's going to be distraught if something else has happened to her face. This was awesome. It was so awesome. Britt Baker's amazing. Like, she's gotten so good. And I love that she's in her little, like, throne situation. Like, she has her little, like, plastic room that she sits in, and she has her own throne, and she has servants, and she's just on top of the world.
Have
I'm
you
so
seen
glad
her
they
face?
Kept her on the show.
Have you seen Britt Baker's tweet with her face?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I'm going to send it to you right now.
Okay.
But yeah, this was great. Britt Baker, oh, she, MVP. My God, she's so good.
She's just great, man. And like, obviously she can't wrestle right now, but she's been still just such an important part of the show. It's been great. I am looking at it in a second. Soon as my phone lets me do that. not only does she have a nose guard on, but she also has like gauze over her mouth.
It's superb. It's so
she's
good.
Just, oh, she's amazing.
So the main event was Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho. Like we mentioned earlier, we were kind of underwhelmed by it. Jericho got the win here. I was going to ask you, do you think that Jericho should have put Orange Cassidy over here? Is that something they should have done? There has been some criticism of AEW that the young guys don't really get to win matches. Where do you sit on it?
I would have liked to see Orange Cassidy win, but at the same time, I kind of get it because it's Chris Jericho. Maybe they could do a rematch down the line. I don't want to see it like next week or anything like that. I don't know. Like, I don't have a problem with it necessarily, but if you want to make Orange Cassidy the guy, then you are going to have to give him some big wins, right? Like, and he tends to lose the bigger matches. Because I'm trying to think, what is his record in AEW?
Orange Cassidy's.
Yeah.
I think he's lost. Has he lost?
Because he lost a pack.
He's
right?
lost a pack, and then I think he's won a trios match or a couple of trios matches.
Uh huh.
I think he's lost a trios match. I don't know what his rating is.
But, you know, like it's kind of uneven, and that's fine. Like Orange Cassidy as a character, I think he can lose this match, and he's still going to be Orange Cassidy, and he's going to be fine, right? Like he will still be as lazy as he can be until you flip that switch and turn it on and he's going to go and he's going to be awesome. I think Chris Jericho and Orange Cassidy, when I say I was underwhelmed by it, I mean that I really, really liked it. I wasn't
there were some really
out
good
of
near
my
falls.
Chair screaming. Yeah, there were some really good near falls. And there were moments where I thought maybe Orange Cassidy would actually be Chris Jericho, which I didn't think going in. I just kind of figured it's Chris Jericho, right? Like he's not the champion anymore, but he's still Chris Jericho and he's still a really important part of the show. And even though he is older, it doesn't feel like a dude lording over everyone. Like it really does feel like he wanted to work with Orange Cassidy to put Orange Cassidy over in a loss. And I think he did. I think that Chris Jericho has done a really good job of working with younger talent, even when he wins, like making them look good and making them look important. I think beating Chris Jericho should feel like a really big deal, which is why it felt like such a big deal when Jon Moxley did it. So I understand, right? Like I understand wanting to keep that allure of Chris Jericho and have him be kind of unbeatable on your show so that it really matters when it happens. So yeah, I didn't mind the finish, I guess, maybe as much as somebody else. I mean, I was bummed because I love Orange Cassidy with all my heart and I just wanted him to win because he's my fave. But, you know, other than that, I thought it was really, really good. And I bit for some of the near falls and I bit for the shenanigans and Orange Cassidy's just so good, man. Like, do you know how good you have to be him? And I know I've said it before, but like his timing and his comedy and his body control and everything that he does is just so good. And it's awesome to see it on a big stage. And it makes me so happy. And I think this was definitely like the deserving main event of the show.
Yeah, it was really good. And we had a really good Wednesday Night of Wrestling all in with Fighter Fest and Great American Bash. So there was a lot of good stuff to take away from it. That is it for us though. We will be back next week with a lot more stuff. Sandra, what are the plugs?
You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the_ropes. Follow us on Instagram. I am at SandraRuth. He is at MCINTOKNNY and at Inside_the_ropes on Instagram as well. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can support us and you can get tons of bonus content for supporting us. There are retro ITR shows where we delve into wrestling from 20 years ago. We are working our way through the year 2000 right now. It is bonkers. It is in some ways a lot of fun. If you want to hear me not praise Chris Jericho, listen to Retro ITR. He is not really my fave in the year 2000. He is much better now. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is the other way you can support us. Like, subscribe, do all of the things so that the algorithm loves us. And check out the interview with FTR that Kenny just did. It's a blast. Other video interviews are going up, clips from our live events, things of that nature are always going up on YouTube. So check that out. And I think those are all of the plugs.
That is all the plugs. So we are going to leave you with the theme tune to the new NXT American, North American and NXT champion, Keith Lee. It's time to bask in his glory, everybody. Here is Big Keith Lee. We'll be back next week with more. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, bask in his glory. For he is limitless. Sound, cause I'm just getting started, boy, and yeah, I'm making them rounds. I put my blood, sweat, and tears on that gridiron. I've been the greatest for years, and you just still trying.